Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter Jr. and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
Yumi Hogan helped the American state of Maryland secure 500,000 coronavirus tests from her native South Korea. Hogan is the wife of Larry Hogan, Maryland's governor. Now she is working to secure donations from the state's Asian American communities to fight the coronavirus. Asian Americans in Maryland already have donated about 560,000 pieces of personal protective equipment to the state government. The donated supplies include face masks, hand sanitizer products, and medical clothing. They were given to Maryland Unites, a program that the governor launched in March. Its goal is to gather donations and sign up volunteers from private industry. Yumi Hogan told VOA, through the donations, the Asian communities proved they can play an important role. Among the donors is Chi-Ling Tong. She is the president of the Asian and Pacific Islander American Chamber of Commerce and Entrepreneurship. Tong worked with Eugenia Henry, the Baltimore chapter president of the Global Federation of Chinese Businesswomen Association. The two women mobilized the Asian American community to donate 40,000 surgical masks and 10,000 face shields to Maryland. Tong told VOA that the donations were aimed at showing thanks to the state's doctors and healthcare workers. She said that her ties with Yumi Hogan were important in her decision to donate. Tong added that Hogan informed us about what PPE the state of Maryland needs, how the state can accept and distribute them, which was very helpful for donors. On April 18th, a special Korean Air flight landed at Baltimore, Washington International Thurgood Marshall Airport. The airplane was carrying 500,000 coronavirus tests. 2 days later, Governor Hogan announced that he had purchased the test kits from South Korea because he could not secure them from the U.S. federal government. Hogan said that Maryland had to compete with every other state in America for tests. He also called his wife a champion. He said the deal would not have happened if she did not help. Yumi Hogan made a personal appeal to the South Korean ambassador to the United States, Lee Soo-hyuk, as part of the effort. U.S. President Donald Trump criticized the governor's deal to get test kits from South Korea. He said Hogan could have saved a lot of money if he had called Vice President Mike Pence instead. Yumi Hogan still remembers the day the test kits arrived with great emotion. She said she was deeply moved when the plane landed. Maryland's First Lady also has been active in supporting arts and cultural exchanges between the United States and South Korea. In 2017, she led a business delegation to South Korea. During the trip, Maryland reached a sister state agreement with South Jeolla Province. Yumi Hogan returned home with a Korean plant called jok and later used it to introduce Korea's natural dye culture to Marylanders. Hogan is an artist and enjoys painting. Art is what connected her with Larry Hogan 20 years ago. The two first met at an art show. They married in 2004. She has three daughters from an earlier marriage and is the first Korean-American First Lady of any state. Yumi Hogan noted that she is not a politician, but a mother. She said that is how she defines her position as Maryland's First Lady. Children, women, people with disabilities, and financial difficulties, especially single mothers, are the ones who need attention, she said. Hogan helps sick children by providing art therapy through her nonprofit group, Yumi Cares. She told VOA, even with a great legal system and administrative system, there are still many people who need attention and care. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Google has launched a communications system that uses the company's Android phones to detect earthquakes. It aims to provide timely information about earthquakes to phones that run the mobile operating system. The new warning system has already been tested in California, which has more damaging quakes than any other part of the United States. To develop the system, the company worked with the U.S. Geological Survey, USGS, a federal agency that uses seismographic equipment to measure earthquake activity. Technology for predicting earthquakes does not yet exist. But the USGS says it does have equipment to predict seismic activity near a quake. This means it is possible to warn people in areas where such activity is expected. People could then get several seconds or perhaps up to a minute of warning before a quake strikes. The USGS joined several university partners in developing the new warning system, called Shake Alert. Scientists say the Earth's outermost surface is made up of large tectonic plates. As many as 20 tectonic plates cover the planet. They move slowly, sometimes sliding under one another. When that happens, earthquakes can take place. This sudden release of energy creates different kinds of waves that cause the ground to move. The USGS says the purpose of Shake Alert is to identify the first energy to be released in an earthquake. This first sign of a quake is known as primary wave energy. When sensors identify this primary wave, Android phones immediately report the movement to a processing center, which then estimates the quake's size and intensity. The center uses this data to create a message to warn people using the phones to take action, such as dropping to the ground or taking cover. The USGS says studies in California and two other states have shown that the system could provide warning times from a few seconds to tens of seconds. In addition to warning individuals, such alerts could be used to slow trains, airplanes moving on the ground, or prevent cars from entering bridges or tunnels. These messages could also be sent to businesses so their workers can close down gas lines, elevators, or other equipment before the shaking begins. The USGS system in California has more than 700 sensors, called seismometers, to measure earthquakes. But creating equipment-based systems around the world would be difficult. As a possible solution, Google launched its own earthquake alert system for Android users worldwide. Google says the system turns its phones into small seismometers. Millions of devices with the technology form the world's largest earthquake detection network, the company said on its website. More than 2 billion devices use the Android operating system. Google says all smartphones have built-in accelerometers to measure direction and force of motion. These sensors are mainly used to show how the phone is being held. If the phone identifies something that might be an earthquake, it sends a signal with data about where the shaking happened to a central computer server. The server then combines the data with information from other devices to decide whether an earthquake is, in fact, happening. Google says the process is racing the speed of light against the speed of an earthquake. No extra computer software is needed to run the system on Android devices. Alerts will be sent for earthquakes with a strength of 4.5 or greater. Users will receive a sound alert and warning on the screen, telling them to immediately drop to the floor and seek cover. Google says the data will also be used to provide fast and accurate information on earthquakes through its search engine. When a user searches earthquake or earthquake near me on Google, the latest information will be shown, along with helpful resources on what to do after an earthquake, the company said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Are you at risk of getting seriously ill from the new coronavirus? Here are some things to keep in mind. 80% of coronavirus cases are mild. Young and healthy people are at low risk. Other people and those with serious health conditions have a greater risk of serious illness or even death. If you have a cough, fever, and difficulty breathing, contact the doctor and stay away from other people. For more information, visit the World Health Organization website at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov. Today on The Making of a Nation, we tell about slavery and how it affected the history of the United States. Here is Steve Ember.
Slavery is the custom of one person controlling or owning another. Some historians say it began following the development of farming about 10,000 years ago. People forced prisoners of war to work for them. Other slaves were criminals or people who could not repay money they owed. It is said the first known slaves lived more than 5,000 years ago in the Sumerian society of what is now Iraq. Slavery also existed among people in China, India, Africa, the Middle East, and the Americas. It expanded as trade and industry increased. This increase created a demand for a labor force to produce goods for export. Slaves did most of the work. Most ancient people thought of slavery as a natural condition that could happen to anyone at any time. Few saw it as evil or unfair. In most cities, slaves could be freed by their owners and become citizens. In later times, slaves provided the labor needed to produce products that were in demand. Sugar was one of these products. Italians established large sugar farms beginning around the 12th century. They used slaves from Russia and other parts of Europe to do the work. By the year 1300, African blacks had begun to replace the Russian slaves. They were bought or captured from North African Arabs who used them as slaves for years. By the 1500s, Spain and Portugal had American colonies. The Europeans forced native Indians to work in large farms and mines in the colonies. Most of the Indians died from European diseases and poor treatment. So the Spanish and Portuguese began to bring in people from West Africa as slaves. France, Britain, and the Netherlands did the same in their American colonies. England's southern colonies in North America developed a farm economy that could not survive without slave labor. Many slaves lived on large farms called plantations. These plantations produced important crops traded by the colony, crops such as cotton and tobacco. Each plantation was like a small village owned by one family. That family lived in a large house, usually facing a river. Many separate buildings were needed on a plantation. For example, a building was needed for cooking, and buildings were needed for workers to produce goods, such as furniture, that were used on the plantation. The business of the plantation was farming, so there also were barns for animals and buildings for storing and drying crops. There was a house to smoke meat so it could be kept safely, and there was a place on the river from which goods were sent by ship to England. The plantation owner controlled the farm and saw that it earned money. He supervised, fed, and clothed the people living on the property, including the slaves. Larger plantations might have 200 slaves. They worked in the fields on crops that would be sold or eaten by the people who lived on the plantation. They also raised animals for meat and milk. Field slaves worked very long and hard. They worked each day from the time the sun rose until it set. Many of these slaves lived in extreme poverty, in small houses with no heat or furniture. Sometimes 5 or 10 people lived together in one room. House slaves usually lived in the home of the plantation owner. They did the cooking and cleaning in the house. House slaves worked fewer hours than field slaves, but were more closely supervised by the owner and his family. Laws approved in the southern colonies made it illegal for slaves to marry, own property, or earn their freedom. These laws also barred slaves from receiving an education or even learning to read. But some owners permitted their slaves to earn their freedom or gave them money for good work. Other owners punished slaves to get them to work. The punishments included beatings, withholding food, and threatening to sell members of a slave's family. Some plantation owners executed slaves suspected of serious crimes by hanging them or burning them alive. Historians say that people who were rich enough to own many slaves became leaders in their local areas. They were members of the local governments. They attended meetings of the legislatures in the capitals of their colonies, usually 2 times a year. Slave owners had the time and the education to greatly influence political life in the southern colonies, because the hard work on their farms was done by slaves. Today, most people in the world condemn slavery. That was not true in the early years of the American nation. Many Americans thought slavery was evil, but necessary. Yet, owning slaves was common among the richer people in the early 1700s. Many of the leaders in the colonies who fought for American independence owned slaves. This was true in the northern colonies as well as the southern ones. One example is the famous American diplomat, inventor, and businessman Benjamin Franklin. He owned slaves for 30 years and sold them at his general store. But his ideas about slavery changed during his long life. Benjamin Franklin started the first schools to teach blacks and later argued for their freedom. Slavery did not become a force in the northern colonies, mainly because of economic reasons. Cold weather and poor soil could not support such a farm economy as was found in the South. As a result, the North came to depend on manufacturing and trade. Trade was the way colonists got the English goods they needed. It was also the way to earn money by selling products found in the New World. New England became a center for such trade across the seas. The people who lived there became shipbuilders so they could send the products to England. They used local wood to build the ships. They also sold wood and wood products. They became businessmen carrying goods around the world. The New England shipbuilding towns near the Atlantic Ocean grew quickly as a result. The largest of these towns was Boston, Massachusetts. By 1720, it had more than 10,000 people. Only two towns in England were larger, London and Bristol. More than 25% of the men in Boston had invested in shipping or worked in it. Ship captains and businessmen held most of the public offices. The American colonies traded goods such as whale oil, ginger, iron, wood, and rum, an alcoholic drink made from sugar cane. Ships carried these goods from the New England colonies to Africa. There they were traded for black Africans who became slaves in the American colonies. The Africans had been captured by enemy tribesmen and sold to African slave traders. The New England ship captains would buy as many as they could put on their ships. Conditions on these ships were cruel. The Africans were crowded together and forced to travel in areas so small they could hardly move. Some were kept in chains. Many killed themselves rather than live under such conditions. Others died of health disorders they caught on the ship. Yet many did survive the trip and became slaves in the southern colonies or in the Caribbean islands. Black slaves were needed to work on Caribbean sugar plantations. The southern American colonies needed them to work on the tobacco and rice plantations. By 1750, almost 25% of the total number of people in the American colonies were black slaves. From the 1500s to the 1800s, Europeans sent about 12 million black slaves from Africa to America. Almost 2 million people died on those slave ships. Historians say English ships carried the greatest number of Africans into slavery. One slave ship captain came to hate what he was doing and turned to religion. His name was John Newton. He stopped taking part in the slave trade and became a leader in the Anglican Church. He is famous for having written the song Amazing Grace.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.